You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here at the back table of The Comedy Cellar. My name is Noam Dorman. I'm the owner and the host of the show. With me, as almost always, is Mr. Dan Natterman.
Right, one and only, baby.
Almost always, unless I'm on the continent.
Comedian-wise, right now we have Mr. Dov Davidoff, one of our favorites. And I think this is Dez's first time.
Dez Bishop is fine.
Dez Bishop, first appearance on the Comedy Cellar Show.
Yes, I'm very excited. Thank you for having me.
One of the very, very funniest comedians working at the Cellar right now. And we have a non-comedian guest. His name is Brandon, how do you pronounce it, Heppard.
Like Shepard.
Brandon Heppard, rhymes with Shepard, is a PhD candidate at the New School for Social Research in New York City. He is the chair of the humanities. So you
don't have to read all of
no,
that.
No, no. So you teach there and you're a PhD? So you're a chair?
Oh. I'm at another school, at a community college. I'm the chair of the Humanities Social Science Department. I'm finishing my PhD. Right here at the New School.
Oh, there was a comma. Chair of the Humanities, Social Science, Education Department at Raritan Valley Community College, where he also serves as the co-director of RVCC's Women's Center. Okay. What does that mean? It doesn't matter.
Weinstein isn't allowed.
And he was recently selected as a New Jersey Public Scholar by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities for his work on the philosophy of comedy.
Oh yeah! Wow.
Nice.
Which is why he's here with us today. Now, you wrote a paper on what was it?
Comedy and revolution.
Comedy and revolution.
Yeah. So comedy as a revolutionary practice.
Che Guevara.
Did you read any of the paper?
Yeah, I did. It was really interesting and engaging. Yeah. Yeah, Che Guevara wasn't very funny.
No.
Didn't have much of a sense of humor.
You might want to mention also, but just very briefly, that Dez is one of the biggest comedy stars in Ireland.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Dan.
Our Irish listeners are very excited.
Yes, I'll be good for the Irish. We'll get a little analytic spike on the Dublin listeners.
Yeah, analytic spike.
Okay, so I listened to the PDF of the comedy dissertation on the way to work, and what struck me the most is that he doesn't believe that a conservative can be funny.
Oh.
I mean, I'm not the only one. I'm just, taking listen to all the arguments and telling it like it is.
Why can't a conservative be funny?
The first easiest way to say it is, comedy is about punching up. I mean, it's an old cliche. It's a truism. But, the conservative world.
Now, when you say comedy, you mean stand-up comedy or I Love Lucy, Seinfeld?
So part of the whole, and, you're asking a professor, I will nerd out, so you can just cut me off. But, like,
don't we look nerdy to you? Except for Dez.
No, but, all the way back to the origins of comedy, like stand-up, is relatively new in the sphere of comedy. Comedy since the beginning, since the Greeks. It was always one thing, which was drama, right? The theater then became film, and then only recently all the other
variations. Get to why the conservatives can't be funny. Come on.
No. So my point is, it's all of it. You asked what kind of comedy. I'm saying I Love Lucy. I'm saying all of it. All of comedy, I believe, is about punching up.
But now, hold on.
So any argument like Take My Wife, Please is conservative or liberal?
So one of the things I say is there's a difference between just humor and being just an entertainer. Right. And being an entertainer is a fantastic thing. You can make a living. You make people laugh. But that's not the same as being a comedian.
Right.
With regard to comedy being about punching up, generally that's the case. But how do you explain fat chick jokes always being funny?
Oh, sure. Well, again, funny is not necessarily the
definition. But he's making a distinction.
Yeah.
And he's...
Well, you're saying a conservative, you can't be funny if you're punching down.
I didn't say funny. You could be funny. I'm just saying you're not necessarily a comedian. You're not necessarily doing comedy. Yeah. Comedy is this thing about working through problems to a good ending. So even in a stand-up, right?
Is that a definition you decided
yes,
on?
Yes, exactly.
So part of the whole dissertation project, the whole first section is about tracing all the major arguments about comedy. Mm. And you can kind of distill them all into two categories. There's like the old school, like theorists back to Aristotle, and it was about the structure, right? There's certain pieces of comedy. It was about the actors. It was about the plot structure, all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't necessarily about the laughter. That was implied, but like that, right. Aristotle doesn't say that's an essential piece. And that's like the way they thought of comedy until pretty much the postmodern theorists who say, No, comedy is all these different kinds of things. You can't define it. You can't explain it. The only thing that you can distill it is the laughter. So you can only define it by the unexplainable, which is laughter. So these are the two traditions.
Right.
And really, my project says neither are sufficient on their own. You need both. Mm-hmm. So just the laughs is not necessarily comedy. But just the structure without laughs, if you don't get laughs, it's also not comedy.
But you start the conversation by saying conservatives cannot be funny?
No,
I started it that way, but I wasn't trying to be unfair to
you. No worries. Yeah. So the argument is it's not truly comedians. It's not doing comedy. It's not the work of comedy. And even check this out. Like, you can make a joke. Well, first of all, I even think, like, comedy will appeal, you know, even though true comedian, we always, right, will appeal to whatever will keep the show going, right? Yeah. It's always about you got to keep the show going. But ultimately, you know, sometimes that's the cheap gag, but there's a bigger picture. There's a bigger narrative going on.
To think there's a truth to power element.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the.
You know, I'd like to think that I'm 6'2", and you know, a hit with the ladies, but last week we were about to touch upon this, but then Noam changed the subject to Trump, as sometimes happens. But you know, this notion that comedians are there to speak truth and to reveal uncomfortable truths is maybe a worthy goal, but not typically what most comedians do. In point of fact.
And also, you'd have to define conservative in the sense that I'm sure there's some people that we label as conservative that would say we are speaking truth to power because power is working against us.
I think we can do those in the same kind of thought here. So say what you said again. Say the main thought.
About Noam talking about Trump all the time?
No.
I was saying that the idea that comedians... that our job is to speak truth to power is not typically what I'm seeing on stage when I hear about, you know, be it about... period sex, or Will Sylvester thinking he's going to blow a big load, but then it comes out as dribbles.
There's a lot of truth in there. That's just true. So part of the whole project...
You know that bit that he does? He goes,
it's genius, don't know it.
He's like, you better back up, and then nothing comes out.
So to that very point, part of my project argues that the comedian tells truth through untruth, just like all art, right? Art is telling truth through lies, right? You're making up a story, right? The story is not true necessarily, but there's a deeper truth. There's a deeper meaning in there. It's really true, right? And that's the distilling meaning. I actually start to call comedians and, like, you know, whatever. I'm being a little dramatic, but I call them revelatory prophets, right? Because they're speaking this truth in a way that is... subversive to the system, and it's that subversiveness, right? So the comedian always wants to subvert whatever norm it is. Whatever norm, they're going to flip it. But in order to do that, you have to speak to it. So part of the gag might be, I have to set up that I'm one of you, so we are all on the same page, and then I can flip your norm and show you that, like, I'm going to punch up, I'm going to show you these norms are arbitrary, they don't really mean anything. So there's lots of reasons why a real comedian might appeal to the gag, might appeal to the punch down, but that's not necessarily the ultimate goal. There's always something bigger. And you know, and even just exaggerating, like the caricature, right? That's like a great way of telling the truth through the lie, right? It's exaggerating the point, but now you make it bigger, and like you can see the truth in there, right? Like the big ears or whatever. Like, no, they're not that big, but no, that guy has big ears, right? No, that's real. So you are distilling a truth.
Metaphoric distillation, I mean...
I think comedians do that every day all the time, and especially about the human condition. About everyday human experiences.
I disagree with everything you've said so far.
Really?
Every single word of it.
Dove's feeling me.
Metaphorically, I mean, I experience what you're saying. I think Noam's is gonna, you know, attach to a kind of a word and make an intellectual argument. I would probably agree with him as
no,
well.
I'm probably gonna try to talk sense to you, but you talk feeling.
I think the word conservative is problematic. But I feel what you were just saying there about not accepting norms or, you know, taking...
Yeah, every joke is based on that.
And that, to me, is my definition
that.
Is...
Yeah. Okay, let me tell you.
No, I'm not. Let's hear what Noam...
It's not progressive, anti-conservative, but conservatives wants to maintain the norm.
I'm having trouble keeping track of it all, but just off the top of my head. First of all, do you know what percentage would you say of the material down in the Comedy Cellar is either ethnic jokes or dick jokes?
It's not
it's
low.
It's a robust percentage.
50%.
No, I don't think it's quite that high.
Well, I can say for sure that there is a higher percentage of ethnicity jokes in the United States than there is in Ireland.
Okay.
So I would say there is a high amount of ethnicity jokes.
But he's qualified the idea of a comedian, and he's not talking about just the average whatever that takes place down there. You're talking about the lowest common denominator to some degree. And I think he's saying that if you contextualize the idea of a comedian as somebody who speaks truth to power, subverts... Oh yeah. That I just watched the documentary. Yeah.
We'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get
sit
to
down,
that.
Loser. Sit here. We'll get to that in a minute. Go ahead.
If you accept his definition of a comedian, then you'd have less issues with the language.
Yeah, but he does. This is the thing. This is the thing. This is a problem I have with the left.
Yeah.
They want to have their own personal definitions of things. Like I get an argument about whether or not the Las Vegas shooter was a terrorist. Well, no, he's not a terrorist because, as far as I know, there's no political agenda that he had.
Right.
And they say, well, that's not how I define terrorism. Well, okay, you can define it any way you
want.
That's the whole point of language is to have a common meaning to words.
I have a joke about
now,
that.
Now
a
concept disappears.
Can I say something about that?
He's going to redefine what a comedian is.
Actually, no.
Chaplin is not a comedian.
Nope. Chaplin's an excellent comedian. He's one of the best.
Yeah.
But he's doing sidecast. Yes.
I think you're getting caught up in the concept of conservative being right and left being progressive.
Yeah.
And they're neither, right? They're trying to subvert whatever norm. But to your point, even the word comedy, you say I'm redefining it. No, I'm reclaiming what it's been since the beginning.
Well, reclaiming could be another way of redefining. There's a lot of words that don't mean what they meant 200 years ago or 500 years ago.
But that's what they mean now. It's the most stable and I'm the nerdy guy.
What's the ultimate example of this? We say, you're an anti-Semite. I can't be an anti-Semite. My parents are Arab, and Arabs are Semitic people.
You just want to strangle them.
That's not what anti-Semite means.
Right.
Sure.
And that's, so you're going to define comedy as being anything that you deem as comedy, and that means in the Deep South, there's no comedians because that, believe me, they're not laughing at what you consider progressive humor. They're laughing at punching down.
To your very point, the thing that makes it funny is the incongruity, and again, it's the subverting whatever norm it is. And it's not that you can't be a conservative per se.
Are you saying Louis C.K. is not a comedian?
He's an excellent comedian.
Louis did a whole pretty conservative bit about abortion on his recent special.
And again, right? He's trying to shake people up, right? He's speaking to a certain audience, and
he was trying to puncture liberal ideas.
Yeah, right. And that's the audience, and he does an excellent job of setting himself up.
So he's trying to subvert the norm.
Yeah.
Okay, but fair.
It's the labeling that's the problem.
I will concede that
you're gonna get
jammed
up on words.
Puncturing a poorly thought out, Dennis Miller, puncturing poorly thought out ideas, kind of emperor's new clothes, saying the emperor has no clothes, is a legitimate branch of comedy. It's not progressive or liberal, which is the way you put it in your thing. But that in itself is only one type of stand-up comedy. There's a lot of other things. Look at Ryan Hamilton. What is? I mean, he's killing. What is he? Progressive, conservative, edgy? No, he's just funny. If you want to sit here,
you're using
and
American.
Mouth, Ryan Hamilton.
You're using American.
I'll say, good day, sir.
So my Irish friend over here, who's performed in China, he's getting what I'm saying. Like you're using very American.
This guy's been Googling, man.
You're using very American political politics. You're using very cultural parochial terms, and I'm using the terms progressive and conservative just in their generic terms. Like again, conservative means preserving the norm, preserving the status quo, even in reactionary ways. And comedy is intentionally, no matter what, is trying to say F that.
Disingenuous. I'm gonna tell you why.
Okay.
Because in your paper, you spent a lot of time talking about Frank Rich's article about this very subject.
Absolutely.
And in that article, Frank Rich did not use the word conservative to mean your word at all. He meant it to be conservative politically.
In his argument, it aligns, right? So some American conservatives align.
I'm telling you, you want to talk about making up the meanings of words. That's not the definition you use in your paper, because if it were, you would have to have spoken about Rich's column differently.
Can you sum up Rich's column quickly so we know what we're talking about? Two things. Yeah. The dissertation is 225 pages. That was a 10-page article, just a slice. To be fair, the whole dissertation talks about this.
And Orrin Hatch is not fun.
Listen, we don't pull punches here. You got to come on and defend yourself.
I'm here.
But it was pretty interesting paper. Don't get me wrong.
Just the Rich article, and he says, it's not even his argument. There's all this, criticism about people saying liberals, liberals in their whatever towers saying conservatives can't be funny. And then he's really thinking about the question, and he says, well, if that's true, right, especially in this capitalist system, if there were funny conservatives, like, Fox would have them. Like, everybody would put them on because they'd make money for them. Well, but where are they? Why don't they?
Greg Gutfeld is a pretty big power on Fox right now, and he's a funny guy.
If you go outside of Fox,
Dennis Miller.
And Frank Rich says Dennis Miller is the only conservative name with any staying power that anybody can reach for.
Again,
I'll even say this. A conservative, they can be funny, but in order to do it, you have to construct a worldview.
When you say
to
Fox,
people.
You mean Fox News?
Just no, Fox, like, you know, where they have sitcoms. I don't know, regular Fox,
I don't know anything
the network.
About the Fox.
You
know? Is Fox,
Louis
Net-
on Fox,
is Fox
right?
Network considered conservative?
No, that's FX.
But Fox,
just
Fox
all the,
owns
any
it,
channel, right? They're trying to make money is the point. And if they, anybody
I,
would
I,
have
this
a
what
home
I
for
think. I think that there is, much of it can be explained. First of all, I believe in other areas of the country, they do have conservative comics. But
they have Christian comics.
They have Christian, oh, there was this whole article
they're
about
terrible.
This. About this. Oh, hold on. No, apparently there's this Utah sketch group in a see this in a university in Utah. They're totally squeaky clean, and they have like a billion hits worldwide. I've been meaning to check them out. Apparently, they're really really funny. They're like Ryan Hamilton. However, the youth culture tends to be very liberal, and they like titillating things, and they like dirty jokes and whatever it is. And I think that is the demographic that a lot of TV shows play to. I doubt there's a big market for conservative humor among youths. But if they were trying to appeal to the 55 and older group, you might actually see some a totally different.
Now you're a bunch of like, you know, a network. I don't care who the money's coming from. Yeah, if they can make money, they're going to do it.
Yeah, but
so we can make excuses about, well,
no, that's
if,
not
was,
true.
If they actually tried, they've tried.
There's a magic demographic.
Where is it? Where is it? Why aren't they doing
it? A silent majority, I think you call them.
No, there's a particular demographic that the shows...
Kids like to watch TV, buy DVDs, go to concerts, so kids are often targeted by mass media for that reason, whereas 55-year-olds tune out a little bit.
Actually, 55-year-olds buy DVDs. Kids don't buy DVDs.
Foxworthy, the Southern comedians, they are very progressive to that crowd, to the crowd they're talking to their world.
You can define it anyway. But we're talking about, look, there's not that many comedians on TV. Comedy Central is a bastion for liberalism, okay? And they would never consider putting a conservative in that chair.
Are you worried about conservatives? You're worried conservatives are, like, under attack. You're, like, really worried. Hey, conservatives
we are,
world. But this is why Trump comes out. Now I understand. Okay, now I didn't understand.
No,
now you're really worried.
Four
like,
white men are here
I know,
to attack
and
you.
Four, and they're all worried. Like, you're trying to say my world is crumbling.
No,
is this what we're talking
Nick,
about?
I think Nick DiPaolo is one of the funniest
That's
guys
why
ever.
Trump comes out.
I think no, I'm not a pro-Trump guy. And I think that Comedy Central would never, ever put a conservative comedian in that position. So to point out that they don't have any conservatives on Comedy Central, I think is just to point out the bias of the people deciding at Comedy Central. Wouldn't matter how funny. Colin Quinn, for instance. Colin Quinn is I don't want to call him conservative, but he's pretty conservative, actually.
Sure.
But he's definitely not a liberal.
He's a common sense
guy.
They're all center-right kind of guys.
He's Democrat.
Well, Colin did have a show on there
and they chased it off because they didn't. He got flagged for his politics.
So your politics too that you're talking about right now are very narrow. Like, I don't know if you see me as a liberal. I'm not a liberal, man. I'm
Look
a radical. My politics
are
radical.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And that's not represented. But that's a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
So when you say conservative politics, you're still thinking this very narrow slice of like American CNN news. When there's so many people that are far right of that, far left of that, the political spectrum is so much wider. And that's staying within like a very narrow, not real perspective of the people. So, like, yeah, the conservatives aren't represented, but neither are, like, radical views because they challenge the capitalist system that we live in. So
well, we don't talk bad about capitalism on this show.
Yeah, well, no, I guess
kidding.
I won't be invited back.
Just
for the
record. He's kidding.
We got bogged down in a liberal conservative thing. But I'm the liberal.
I just got to go on record with that, man.
Spurch
my name.
You know... I'm a musician, really.
Same.
And
in his heart and in his soul.
When I read,
but not in his wallet.
When you read somebody, when you read somebody like really try to explain music in a PhD paper, you inevitably say, you know, this is not quite what it is. Comedy is what makes you laugh, in my opinion.
Well, there's a famous C.S. Lewis quote about that, right? Do you ever encounter that quote?
I'd say about, it.
He was a Christian, by the way, C.S. Lewis. Go ahead.
Big time, yeah.
It was, you know, like trying to, you know, with investigate comedy is like dissecting a frog.
Oh,
nobody
sure.
enjoys it and the frog dies.
I quote many people saying similar things.
So that's right. That's the kind of, that's kind of, there's one other thing no one lets you go. You said you use the word
libertarian.
No. You use it a lot as a, what comedy is. It's not liberating.
Liberatory.
Libertary.
Liberatory.
Liberatory. How do you spell that?
So L-I-B-E-R-A-T-O-R-Y.
Liberatory.
Liberatory.
And what does that mean?
So it's just a term that means tending to liberate, and it just is a subtle difference that gives, that holds some space to say, hey, sometimes when you're trying to like liberate yourself, you're trying to get free from something, you're trying to overcome something, it's so overwhelming, it's not automatic. Like, there's some things like I automatically can be liberated from. Like, I go for a walk in the woods, I'll be liberated from my stress. If I'm trying to like get out of a situation of slavery, I'm going to try a whole lot of different stuff. I'm going to try this, I'm going to try this. So those are like liberatory practices that I'll attempt. Often, like, they're not likely, but they're possible. So it's like holding space for this, like, unlikely utopian dream imagination, but that has actual possibility.
All right.
So
I would think that in your paper would have convinced me more if you had narrowed the subject matter to be talking just about what it is that you want to talk about, which is, you know, this slice of comedy. Like to take Bill Cosby, for instance. We grew up loving these Bill Cosby records.
Yeah.
Where he have talk about getting his tonsils taken
sure.
out and his neighborhood, and this has, you know, he's not even punching up or down, he's just funny, and you seem to have written off that thing, and that actually, I believe those kind of things will stand the test of time better than the stuff that you're talking about, because your stuff is kind of time dated if it's about Trump or about conservative politics. I mean, you know, but I thought the paper was great. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, thank you. The larger dissertation is about comedy, all forms. And it's actually saying the stuff that's like rah-rah political is not even what we're talking about. It's the subtlety of comedy that they can't see them coming and they can't shut that down. So it's not the things that are like anti-Trump or any particular time period. And that's why like Aristophanes stuff, no, they're not still doing that exactly, but they keep remaking that in different ways. That stuff is a timeless tale. It's a timeless story.
Aristophanes is timeless. I always say that, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, even, you know, I know it might not be your brand of thing, but like the Spike Lee documentary.
Well, my only reference to Aristophanes, it was a punchline on The Odd Couple one time. Remember when they were playing Password or a $20,000 pyramid or
you're
The Odd Couple?
You guys never
watched The Odd Couple?
You never watched The Odd Couple? We're all in the age group where Odd Couple references.
They played on TV. shut up, Des. They played on TV. Anyways, Aristophanes was the famous one, but I never read Aristophanes.
No, my point is like Shakespeare,
began
the story.
In Greek drama / comedy, and it's still being repeated 2,000 years
the
later.
Same jokes, the same storylines. That's what I mean. Like Aristophanes, yeah. Shakespeare, like when you're seeing these sitcoms and you're seeing a lot of it's the same stories.
Yeah. And drama too. Drama,
right? It's the same, yeah.
So. All right, Brandon, we're gonna let you go. Actually, you can still hang out. We have another guest we want to bring.
Well,
on
I did
for want a while.
To talk briefly also about Dove. Is recently his experience.
Okay, let loser sit down. Brandon, come sit up. Why don't you come sit? Why don't you switch places with him in case you want to
sure.
chime in, get you another whiskey. Come on, loser.
I'll do that.
We have if anybody's seen this, we'll talk about Dove. We have this.
Yeah. No, we don't need to.
This man. No, I want to hear it. Loser.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Loser Twersky, who is the star of this new Netflix documentary
yes.
about the sexual abuse that he suffered.
No, that's not what it's about.
That's not what it's about.
That's
can I come
of the
in
characters. Yeah.
yeah. It's one of the. It's. I mean, it's not about that. It's about
it's
people who leave
character.
The Hasidic community in general.
Right.
It's about three people who leave the Hasidic community. Oh. I'm one of the
people.
Yeah,
there's a woman, too.
Yeah, there's a woman. Oh, you've seen it already?
Okay,
I saw it last night.
So wait. So
yeah, all right.
So, hold on, Lou. So let's just, before we get to that sexual abuse, I want to talk about the situation between Dove and his wife. What's going on?
Speaking of sexual abuse.
And then maybe you could chime in with the Hasidic point of view on that. Go ahead.
What? What do you want? The sperm?
Dove,
the IVF?
Well, Dove is, Dove and his wife, unfortunately, are not able to conceive at this time without a little help from the medical community, so they have to do IVF.
That's right, yeah.
You went to the spermatorium?
I did. I laid down. I sat down in a, it looks like, you know, they put it like an old hospital chair, and you sit in basically a well-lit closet, and then you jerk off into a cup, but they leave you three magazines. They had a choice between Penthouse, Playboy, and Tramps. Last time I was, anyway.
Which one did you choose?
tramps, like a gentleman. What am I going to I may as well jerk off to a commercial. I feel like a man. I want somebody who doesn't respect themselves if I'm going to let it go.
That is the name, or is it the ejaculatorium?
Ejaculatory, yeah.
There's a name for the room.
Oh, really? No, I don't know what the name of the room is.
Oh, yeah.
I just know that it's not romantic.
Well, now it's called the Davidoff room.
The Davidoff suite.
It's been renamed.
Yeah.
My question was, why don't they let your wife come in with you
right,
to be part of the experience, that beautiful creation of life?
Because saliva tampers with the sample.
That's part of it, but also I think it would turn the waiting room into a different kind of thing, you know? Like, I mean, you had a bunch of people going in and out.
What if you said you had religious objections to masturbating, and so you had to have your
wife? My wife
jerk me off? Are we punching up here? Are we punching up?
You're
speaking truth to power.
So look, but my, can I ask you about the human thing? Like, Dove.
Yeah,
Now, I'm just gonna ask. So
always
Dove
ask,
is first of all, Dove had a reputation for many years as a cocksman. I mean, Dove,
the best there was.
Dove
can bag
a woman.
Best there was. Best I've ever seen.
Yeah. And Dove would have stories about three different women in one time, two different women and a hooker, you know, like insatiable.
Yeah.
And you're not a macho guy, but there's that macho He-Man element to you, which I think is part of your boxing, and you got those manly tattoos and the whole thing. You're not like me and Dan. You're different.
No, I'm a man.
You're a man. And so then to find out that that wimpy little eye just impregnating them right and left. Boom, boom,
sad little, yeah.
And to find out that you were not able to conceive.
Yeah it's such an irony.
How did that make you feel? Did you feel less attractive to your wife? Do you feel hate towards?
Yeah, well, especially when you load the question up like you just did.
That's what's supposed to
be. No. That's all right.
Like when you heard that I got my wife pregnant, were you like, congratulations? Yeah. But inside you're like, fuck that blue Jew bastard.
Yeah, that's right. No, none of that. No.
That would be human.
No, not at all. Yeah, it would be human, but in this case, I don't feel any of those things. I thought it was ironic, and I don't know.
Well, it was ironic that I was able to get a girl pregnant?
No, that I couldn't. Oh, okay. I hadn't thought about it in the context of you shooting tremendous loads at 50. But the
55.
Go 55,
ahead.
Yeah, right. No, I don't know. I mean, in the end, in my act, I talk about how people ask me if I felt sad, like you just asked me, and I thought, yeah, I felt sad, but I felt regret. I've only been married a year and a half, and I've been so paranoid about getting somebody pregnant. I've been using condoms religiously, and I come to find out I could have been splashing this stuff all over the country.
That
I mean,
is
that's what I said in the
all right? the wasted.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, all these years,
all
I could have been shaking it up.
Loads.
That's right. All those neutral loads. I've been blowing into a bag as if there was actual liability involved in having sex with anybody. There was no downside. I've been numbing myself for 40 fucking years.
STDs.
Yes. Nah, then you clear that up with a shot. Outside of HIV, what are you going to get? I'm a man. I don't get herpes. Please. You're kidding me. Herpes sees me, runs the other way. Herpes, you know, a quarter of the population, if you've been with more than 10 women, you've been exposed to it. So if you don't have it by now with my history, you know, I get a cold sore once in a while.
I get a cold sore, yeah.
Now, Dez is a beautiful, like a physically...
So sweet.
Physically,
Bishop,
he's probably the handsomest...
Oh, is he good?
He's probably the handsomest comic that works here, I would suggest.
Him and Russ.
Did you bring a man that has made is involved in an amazing documentary, and he has to be subject to...
Yeah, I know.
We're having a great time. I just wanted to... Oscar Wilde said...
Yeah.
Anybody can sympathize with the sufferings of a friend,
yes,
but it requires a very fine nature to sympathize with a friend's success.
Yeah.
So that's why I say it would be human to resent the amazingly easy time that I have.
No, instead I sympathize with your success.
Well, I don't, you know.
I'm the upside of his quote. I don't have any experience of that. I mean, just
God bless America, right, in 2017, that this is not an obstacle to having children.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's just America, but there are some other countries with IVF. But America is certainly, you know, a place where we can
go and get that technology.
I don't know.
But I did want it. The reason I was obsessing a bit about Dev's dreamy looks is, Dev, you don't see him coming as a cock.
That's right, yeah.
He's okay looking, I guess.
Yeah, I'm
but,
okay.
But Dev's the guy you would expect to be
that
kind of a guy. And I was wondering if that was the case.
I'm definitely more quiet about it.
Yeah.
I'd be more like a sneaky cocksman, more like a sniper.
Right, all right.
Yeah. Have you had a sperm count?
Well, actually, I had testicular cancer, you know, so I'm only carrying the one ball.
I didn't know that. We got a scoop here.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, I think.
And
I didn't know that.
Oh.
Yeah, I think
you have a prosthetic?
I didn't go for the prosthetic, no.
You just got a one...
I just, yeah, it's just there. But you'd be amazed. People always ask me, how is that? But you'd be amazed how little it comes up. How little interest women show towards balls. It's amazing. It's highly low down on the list of their desires.
If I had to lose anything,
it's also much easier for the underwear. It's like it makes things less complicated.
Oh, Des wears a small. Des wears a
small. Anyway.
Big. I left the Hasidic community.
I was concerned, you know, even though it's clear in all the literature that it does not affect your ability to have children. You know, I was concerned, but there was a situation where possibly I could have had a child, but it didn't happen. I won't get into the details, but anyway, I was happy to find out that actually.
How old were you when you were diagnosed?
24, but it's a young man's cancer.
Well, that's interesting.
You were in fear for your life.
Well, I had a lump, and I waited 3 months, and then I got it checked out. But you very quickly realize it's the best cancer to get. I mean, it has almost like virtually no.
Wow.
You'd have to be seriously neglectful to die from it. In fact, Lance Armstrong, who his testicular cancer had progressed to a very severe stage,
and he still lived.
That was incredible neglect on his behalf.
Wow.
To have gone that far.
And what
but
about
he also had the more aggressive type. There's two types. He had the more aggressive type. Mine hadn't spread. I got it out. I got radiation to be safe, but it hadn't actually spread.
I had no idea. Here, you think you look at him, you think he's got everything, Dan.
No, that's the point.
Yeah, but I do only have half a sack. But I have done jokes. In fact, my audition show here, I did my jokes about testicular cancer. So I have done jokes here in the Comedy Cellar.
You didn't know that Esty's father died of testicular cancer.
No, I didn't know.
Explains a lot. What about your T levels? Does it affect? Will it affect your
my testosterone levels?
Yeah,
we're talking about celestial seasoning.
I've never had any of these checked, but they've never been a problem.
But as you get older, you know, like men, T levels go down. I wonder if did they warn you?
They didn't discuss it. No.
They didn't discuss it. So I guess it probably doesn't matter.
No, my understanding is that your one ball can carry the load for two.
Well, that's like one kidney, and one kidney can do the job of two.
Yeah. You just have to limit your intake, right? You can't drink as much as you could otherwise.
I don't know. I'm not sure if that's the case. But
I didn't know we were doing a health podcast. But
we didn't know this. You brought it, but I'm fascinated. Yeah. I'm fascinated by.
He knows. He Googled me.
Is that on your Wikipedia page?
It is actually on my Wikipedia.
Did you write it on your Wikipedia
page? No, it's on there that I turned my experience of testicular cancer into comedy.
Okay. I'm fascinated by people facing adversity. And you know how they handle it.
Well, look no further. I got a dead load, man.
That's why I'm asking those questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Like just to upset Brandon. For instance, Rush Limbaugh, who I don't like. Rush Limbaugh. Yeah. You know that he's deaf.
I did not know that.
He went deaf.
I just knew he had an inability to listen to other people.
No, he's deaf.
Yeah.
And he actually has like a stenographer in real time.
Yeah.
Typing out the callers and stuff on his show.
Wow.
He still speaks.
He's not fully deaf. He's almost deaf.
No, he's fully deaf. He's a cochlear implant, which he said he can get 50% whatever. And I'm like, how? And I was like the, to overcome that. You're a radio talk show host. Then you go deaf. You know, like what a psychological thing. Charles Krauthammer.
I don't know.
Quadriplegic. Like
how
is he?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'll tell you this: $30 million will make you overcome a lot.
That's such the.
Don't go there.
Brandon's thinking. Yeah. I know what the radical thinks. Okay. Anyway, loser Twersky. You tell us about your documentary. Go ahead.
This documentary, it's called One of Us. It's by the people who made Jesus Camp, Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady.
Yeah.
And it's about the three people who leave the Hasidic community. I'm one of them. And the obstacles they face in trying to leave and starting life over again.
Now, it's an excellent documentary. I just saw it. It's really good.
He just brought it up by coincidence when we were sitting down.
Yeah.
So you left because you were being molested, correct?
No. I left.
Fact you were being molested.
Well, yeah, I guess.
I
left because I just didn't believe in it. I left because I wanted to see the world. I wanted to live,
But wasn't the hypocrisy of knowing that this guy was molesting
you? No, I want you to talk about molestation.
I know he wants me to talk about molestation.
Huge part of his story.
It isn't. It actually ended up being a very small part of my story. It just got a lot of press.
Yes, I'm familiar with that part of the story.
It got a lot of press.
Des was an altar boy.
I was an altar boy, but I wasn't molested.
Now he's an altar boy.
Yeah.
At the time when that story came out.
If Dez wasn't molested, then who the hell are they molesting?
Who are these people going after if not Dez is what Dan wants to know.
Eventually you'll get to talk about your stuff.
Well, go ahead.
I don't care because I'm listening to funny. I'm not funny, so like, I got to listen to you.
Comes along, I mean, it's the real topic of the day with Harvey Weinstein and Bill O'Reilly.
A lot going on.
Go ahead.
But no, anyway, but that story ended up becoming getting a lot of traction because it was at the time of ExoJane was like big and it came out on ExoJane and it got widely shared. But actually, like, it's very even like in the documentary or in other like interviews, I don't talk about that much because it just wasn't a significant part of my life. It happened. It was shitty, yeah, but you know, it wasn't a big deal. To me, like, the reason I left is because I wanted to see the world. I wanted to be an actor and I wanted to do things that you can't really do.
I want to ask
while
you
remaining
one question
Hasidic.
About
yes.
the only question. Right?
Yeah.
If this woman, who was the woman who just found out settled with Bill O'Reilly?
I forget her name. A producer on the show.
Liz Wheel.
Yeah.
Got $32 million.
Yes.
How much do you think you should get?
Mm-hmm. I don't want anything. I don't care. I mean, any money is fine. I mean, you give me $5, I'll take it. I'm Jewish. I mean, like, whatever money you give me, I'll take. But
I don't think that's a Jewish thing.
No,
You give them $5, they'll take $5.
You give me $5, they can I have 10.
Yeah, I'm just trying to put it in perspective. Like, $32 million to you, or $33 million to the Goldman family for Ron Goldman getting killed. Now, you're a child being molested repeatedly by somebody that you're supposed to trust.
Yeah.
It was a rabbi, right?
Well, he was like a teacher, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, private tutor.
Anyway, go on.
I don't know. I don't understand. I don't understand why people want money or if it's going to affect your career in a serious way. Like, I think the cheat probably it needed to make up for like what you would have lost if she ended up getting into a fight with him or whatever. What the legal costs would be. I don't know. I don't know what that calculation is. I don't understand it.
Right. Now, the better questions are: how do you reconcile the loss of that kind of spirituality in your life with this secular horror show that he's running? How do you reconcile the sense of sort of community? I guess you create another sense of a kind of community.
No, you don't.
The secular world just.
Well, you've
different.
Seen the film, so you know that, like, I struggle with that, you know, like, to find my place and, like, where I belong and to, like, to replace that sense of community.
You have a passion. I remember from your last time on our show, this was years ago, that you have a passion, and that passion is black women.
Not anymore. I still like them, but now I like all other women too.
Okay.
Yeah. His passion was black women?
It was. Yeah. I don't remember that at all. I remember in the
like
back
De Niro.
in the day, that was Lewis's.
That was my thing for a while. Thing. For a long time. It still is. I mean, yeah.
But now
what do you think, Brandon?
Are you Jewish?
I am, yeah.
I mean, I don't know, but a lot of Jewish guys like black women.
So, but it doesn't bother you.
Like hip-hop, too, right?
I mean, I'm not crazy about hip-hop, but yeah.
You know, well, you know, I think, you know, marginalized people, you know,
we stick together.
All right. Who doesn't love black women?
I'm smelling another thesis.
I find most Chinese guys.
We have a lot of
Chinese. All I actually, but it doesn't matter.
Don't incriminate yourself.
I lived with a black woman for 5 years.
You still do.
You fit the stereotypes. Jewish man's desire for a black.
Yeah. So I
wish more people could experience.
But our relationship wasn't based on like Spike Lee had that movie Jungle Fever.
Why
are
you writing a book about conservatism for people who aren't necessarily people's idea of conservative is so off. When I first met you, it allowed me a kind of model of a free thinker with conservative ideals that made a lot of sense to me, and I think people need to experience that. Conservatives get such a bad rep because they haven't met a conservative who used to live with a black woman, who's a musician, who engages with their own free-form ideas and really questions and deconstructs.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Thank you. Say one more thing, Brady.
And I'll just throw this out there, and it's not about you or anyone. Yeah. Or you.
Quick.
You can love or live with a black woman or an Asian woman. You can still be racist.
I agree with you.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with you. She was a racist.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, of course
she was. She was definitely an anti-Semite.
This mic is still on.
And she didn't come in that way. She left that way. So go ahead, Loser. What
Loser, oh, by the way, is spelled L-U-Z-E-R.
L-U-Z-E-R, yes.
It's an odd
Loser.
Name, obviously.
That's why I started to say that our relationship really wasn't based on the racial thing, and I was actually very offended when I saw Jungle Fever, the Spike Lee movie, because he tried to make the point that every interracial relationship was really just about the white guy wanting to get, you know, the forbidden black pussy, but, right. But and I really thought that was totally unfair and shallow on his part. Anyway, go ahead, Loser. What do you miss about the Hasidic community?
As I said, the sense of belonging, sense of community, the music, the food, you know.
Forbidden pussy.
You can still get the food.
Yeah, I can get the food, and I do it, and I do it, and I do it. If you see the film, you see there's a scene in the film where I go to like a Hasidic family, like a semi-Hasidic family, yeah. Like an open-minded Hasidic family, and we go and we eat and we sing the songs and then we smoke some weed, you know. So I like that, but I like the stuff afterwards too, you know. And the black guy's making fun of me talking with my hands, you know.
What? To what extent do you think that the typical Hasid really believes, like, what percentage of Hasids really believe the earth was formed, you know, whatever, 3,000 years ago, Adam and Eve?
95%. That?
They believe it?
Yeah, then 95% of them believe it.
And how do they reconcile it with science?
Well, that God created it to look like it's a billion years old.
He it's made like he redefined comedy.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good.
I didn't thought of that.
Pretty yeah. good. Yeah, he hid the dinosaur bones.
He hid it, yeah, right.
Now, but as if it's not hard enough to believe in God, he's making it even more
he's
challenging.
Game.
Yeah, he's sneaky. sneaky God.
You know, he's doing everything in his power to make that's his right. existence completely non-credible.
Yeah.
And for what motivation, I don't know.
What's the motivation?
Games with dinosaur bones. Yeah, what's the motivation?
Well, I mean, first of all, they don't think dinosaurs are real. They don't think dinosaurs ever existed.
So
they
what don't are we doing that. With all these bones in the ground?
They're bones. I don't know. There,
no,
could, be, there could be a deer. There could
no,
be something else.
No, they can't
else.
Be a deer. They're enormous bones.
You're no, you're saying that the Hasidic explanation is that God had put... made the earth look like it was 4.5 billion years old and that there were dinosaurs and that, well, they, you know, all this stuff.
They also believe that people used to be a lot larger than they are now. So there was Samson, right? There was like all these people, and people used to live longer. They used to live 900 years, right? Methuselah, I don't know how to say it in English, but he lived like 900 years. People lived longer. They were bigger. They were taller. They were stronger. So these bones could be from the old humans, you know, well, back in the Abrahamic days.
With the head of a brontosaurus.
They should have thrown you out of the Hasid. You're the worst advocate for Hasidic thought I've ever heard. There is no way that a Hasidic scholar would have given me that answer.
That's
I'm right. not buying it.
That's what I was told when I was a kid.
That Tyrannosaurus skull could have been just,
yeah, but
you know,
you were
remember
also,
bigger back then.
You were also told that his penis tasted like strawberry.
And that's why I sucked it.
But what do you think it would do to religion in general if they discovered life on another planet, which of course now people are talking about, they discovered some planet like a 4 light years away that could be, you know, possibly harbor life. I doubt it, but maybe. But what do you think that would do?
They will find something in Kabbalah that yeah. says that it was always there. They would listen. If there's something in Kabbalah or like anywhere in the Bible or in like the Torah or the Talmud. That makes no sense, that is kind of like really far-fetched, they're like, you know, they're speaking metaphorically. But then when you find it in real life, it's like, well, obviously, it wasn't the Talmud the whole time. Of course we knew.
But I would think that life in outer space would be the one thing that would be hard for a religious person to reconcile, because it's sort of the specialness of Earth, you know, is gone.
Yeah.
And you
would they'll find a way.
The center of the universe suddenly may not be the center, and that's very frightening.
I mean, there's so many things that challenge the belief. I don't think outer space is going to be the thing that finally seals the deal.
I almost did a real estate deal with a Hasid, and this
guy... Well, thank God you didn't.
No, but I had trouble because he wouldn't make eye contact with me, so... But, you know, and it just felt, and I don't know that that's representative in general. I'm half Jewish, but I go home through Lee Avenue on the way to where I live, and so it's an interesting experience because it's so insular. And the inclination for a human being is to be a bit offended by the lack of neighborhoodliness of that community because it's so insular. And I guess what I'm asking is, do they see other people? Do they see us as people?
Kind of.
I got you. That's how I felt.
kind of. If they have to, you know, if they have,
if they have to
interact with you, then you're kind of a person. But like, yeah, not really. I mean, I told you last time I was on here, I said like that it says in the Talmud that like that God told the Jews, you are considered people, and the rest of the nations are not considered humans. They're not, you know, they're considered
I've always
animals.
Thought of it that way.
No. And I disputed it, and I remember.
No,
this,
you didn't.
Yes, I did, and I tried to get you to back it up, and you couldn't do it, and you went to Google, and you couldn't find it.
No,
remember?
I found you. I gave you the quote.
Nope.
Look in your email. I sent it to you.
But you feel that, Noam, when you're in that community. I mean, clearly there are, you know, there's fear, and the nature of insular communities are that you need to push people out.
They're extremely insular.
Yeah.
And they are cult-like.
Yeah.
However, I will say, and I don't know about what I'm saying, but my feeling is that Loser is also bitter towards them. And therefore...
Not anymore.
And I take... some of what he says as not to be the fairest way coming from the fairest place in terms of describing what they are and what they really believe.
Yeah,
now maybe he's actually right, maybe they do believe that, but I always learned growing up Jewish that
you hear chosen people, it doesn't
exactly. You're not even considered Jewish according to them. They don't even consider you Jewish.
The Ten Commandments, not chosen, and that what we took pride in as Jews was that, as opposed to many other religions, we consider non-Jewish life to be just as sacred as Jewish life.
Yeah.
That you can break any law in the religion, not just to save a Jewish life, to break a non-Jewish, to save a non-Jewish life.
No, you can't.
Yes, you can.
No, you cannot. According to halacha, according to Jewish law,
I'm going to Google. You guys talk among yourselves.
You may not violate the Sabbath to save a non-Jew's life. You may not.
Is this against
the law.
Is this a Hasidic?
No, this is Orthodox Judaism. Okay. This is according to Jewish law. Right. You can violate the Sabbath to save a Jewish life, but you can't do it. But you can't violate the Sabbath to save a non-Jew.
That's not what they rioted over. That's not what
a cross for doing that.
What'd you say?
That was like, I mean, for Christians, right? The Jesus story is... They said, Jesus, why are you doing saving lives on Sunday? You can't. You're violating the Sabbath.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. You guys, I'm really going to Google this. Go ahead.
You know, I don't know if like, again, they didn't teach us anything about Jesus, I don't know.
Right. But no, yeah.
We don't believe in Jesus.
But well, if you guys hadn't killed him, I wouldn't have had to learn all that shit.
That's right. You know what Desmond
We could have all been on the same page.
Well, we'll be on the same page again one day. You know, eventually people will get tired of waiting for Jesus or Mashiach, and, you know, I don't know how long this is going to go on, but you got to figure in 500 years, everybody's just going to be like, you know what, guys, Jesus ain't coming back.
Okay, this is
Mashiach
first,
ain't coming.
The first thing I looked up.
They're going to stop believing it.
Yeah. This is a Judaism.stackexchange.com. Are you allowed to save a non-Jew's life on Shabbos? Yes. To quote... R. Moshe Feinstein, a refusal to treat a non-Jew on the Sabbath would be totally unacceptable. Igra Moshe Arahant 4, I guess this is Talmudic sightings, 4:79.
Feinstein was,
and then there's
was a
three additional
radical,
sources.
Nobody trusts
Source
no,
after no, no. source Feinstein. After source. For additional information, Nachum Rabinovich, whatever.
Feinstein refused to wear a yarmulke. Nobody trusts what he has to say.
Again,
at best, what you're characterizing it at is not an accepted position. Maybe some Jews take that position.
I think the Talmud
and
is...
And that's what I'm worried about.
I'll give you a good example. Hold on.
It was just the first
return
on the Google thing.
I'll explain it. I'll give you a good example of that, okay? You know, the Hasidic Jews have atzala. You know what atzala is?
No.
It's a private ambulance.
Yes.
That is very, very quick and very efficient.
That was the Gavin. Was it Gavin Cato? Was he the little boy? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the black in Grand Crown Heights. Yeah.
David Lee Roth wrote with the Hasidic ambulance.
So they're very quick. Like, if you call atzala in Williamsburg, they're there in like 3 minutes.
Yes.
Okay? If you call EMS, FDNY, it takes them like 10 minutes or 15 minutes to get there.
Right.
So if I'll tell you what would happen. If a non-Jew would collapse in the middle of Borough Park or Williamsburg, you know, you wouldn't call Hatzalah. You would call 911,
right?
Which means you would violate the Sabbath and make a phone call, but you wouldn't call your own people to save that guy, even though you know that that guy could be That guy could be having a heart attack, and by the time the FDNY gets there, he'll be dead. And if I call Hatzalah, I can save his life. You would call because Goyim should save his life. Jews should not violate the Sabbath to save his life.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Maybe technically you're right, but that's not what they would do.
I am more ready to believe what you just said, although I'm quite sure that for many Hasidic people hearing that, they would be offended by that because they say, "Listen, don't paint me with
if
that
brush." They're offended
brush.
By it. Don't do it.
Well, I mean, listen. This is a thing which comes up throughout politics and thought today, which is that for some reason, it's totally acceptable to generalize about certain groups. Like we can generalize. No, Hasids will never. But if you tried to turn that same kind of language towards blacks,
yeah,
or
Mexican,
you
say,
how can,
yeah, yeah,
you can't,
yeah,
talk that way.
Yeah.
So you're saying you know the hussies are rapists, but I'm sure some of them are very nice. This is your version,
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, but it's easier to generalize about a group that's so specific as the Hasids. I mean, they have very specific things that they do.
I've known Hasids. I've read stories about Hasids who've done humanitarian things.
Of course.
But in any event, you started out by saying it's scripture. And now you're saying
you also don't understand that Hasidic Judaism doesn't come from scripture.
Well,
they live by completely different rules.
They teach you that. And now you've shaken it to they are hypocrites. Now hypocrites among religious people are much quicker to believe that you're correct. The more religious, the more likely they are to be hypocrites. And bigoted, yeah. What you're describing is bigotry.
But if we're going to really be technical
about religion.
Reb Moshe Feinstein, that ruling from Reb Moshe Feinstein, actually, Rabbi Feinstein.
Who I never trusted.
Feinstein.
He was the biggest American rabbi, you know, Orthodox rabbi. He's a big deal. But that ruling, I haven't looked at it, but I can guarantee you that the reason that he gave that ruling is not because it's actually... that's actually the law.
For PR.
It's because he thinks that it's bad PR if you don't do it.
Bad PR.
So he ruled that you should do it for bad PR. But the only reason there was a question, why would that question even come up?
Because if it wasn't an issue, why would it even come up? Because it's a natural question.
It's not a natural question. Why is it a natural question? Should you save a goy's life on Shabbos? How is that a fucking natural question?
Of course you should.
What kind of natural question is that? Should you save? Is there a question we should save a black person's life on a weekday?
Let me get you. Some of these Hasidim would definitely give Des mouth to mouth, even on.
Even on Sabbath. That's right. Even on the back.
I wouldn't be able to handle the tickling of the beard.
It wouldn't be your choice.
So sweet.
Do we want to now? So
if I could get a discount in B&H, I'd consider it.
But I will say this. I want to add that everything I say is based on my personal experience. I don't speak for the whole community. Of course, they do wonderful things. They're wonderful people. And again, I do not criticize people. I criticize bad ideas. And I think Hasidic Judaism is full of bad fucking ideas. It is 90% bad ideas and 10%
we
should be nice to each other.
Can we just talk about the good 10%?
Why? It's not that interesting.
What are the worst ideas of Judaism?
Of Judaism?
He's talking about Hasidism in general.
Hasidic Judaism is basically the Taliban of Jews, you know? They're like the most extreme.
Yeah.
You know, so they take everything that says that's in the books, and they're like, well, let's see how far we can take this.
Who's the ISIS? Who's the ISIS of Jews?
Natura Carta.
But they're not going to blow up the Comedy Cellar because you're on my radio show talking this way, are you?
No.
That's not quite the ISIS. Not quite the Taliban.
Modi has a good joke about that, actually. He does it here. I've heard him do that.
So this is...
Speaking of conservative comedians.
The name of the...
Now you're redefining comedians.
He's going to hate me.
The name of the documentary is... what's it again?
It's called One of Us.
One of Us. Very good.
Streaming on
Very well done.
On Netflix.
Now, Netflix, that is a streaming site, is that correct? A streaming site that streams film and television type thing. incidentally, do we
For the old it? People listening.
Yeah. Netflix and is a streaming, yes. Netflix.com, I believe you can find it. do we want to continue this discussion?
Is this
discussion?
A character that you're doing?
It's a character, yes.
This is quite interesting to me.
Also, the World Series would be the Major League Baseball Association, I believe it's called.
This is from I'm not listening to what you're saying. This is from the Jerusalem
Dan's
Post.
On the cutting edge. Yeah.
It says, let me state very clearly, this is Jewish law obligates Jews to save the life of all humans, Jews and Gentiles alike, even if it entails violating Shabbat. This is a universal conclusion of all contemporary decisors.
Contemporary.
Despite confusing media reports of a recent public lecture by a senior Israeli scholar. While this ruling is not disputed, some scholars do disagree regarding the level of argumentation that leads to this consensus position. So, it was a question. Somebody actually thought there was a question. All I would say to you, by way of criticism, is that if you wanted to say this same thing at another show, to say, this is what I was taught. However, I do know that many, many Jewish scholars don't feel that way. Because... Right.
Yeah, but he's talking about Hasidic Jews.
No, well, I don't want to go back to the tape, but he said the Jewish religion says that you're not supposed to. I said that I was taught that they modified the ruling.
They modified the ruling for better PR.
A lot of rulings have been modified, but
right.
Just be fair. That's all I'm saying. I'm not asking you to sugarcoat it. Just be fair. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm, This podcast has a reputation sometimes for
being Jewy,
being a little too Jewish.
That's this why is we, too Jewy.
That's why we invited.
The Talmud is too
Jewy. What are you talking? So diverse.
I have to tell you.
That's why we invited Dez on.
If you were in Ireland, right? Listen, if you were in Ireland and you said to a boy that has been or a man that was abused by a priest as a boy, said, now in fairness, you're a little bit bitter towards the Catholic Church. I don't know if we can listen to your opinion. You would get fucking punched in the face, for the record.
Because they resent the church?
No, because
Irish. You have a fucking right to be resentful towards a religion when you've been fucking abused by people in a position of power. Yeah.
But he doesn't have a right to color the facts because of that resentment.
I'm not resentful at all, actually.
That's what I worry about. Of course, he hates them, but as we all know...
I don't hate them.
Well, you should hate them, and if you were hypnotized, you'd probably hate them. I don't hate them.
I just profoundly disagree with them. That's all.
Okay, but I'm just saying, when you hate somebody or resent somebody, it's tough to give them a fair shake. I try to force myself to... I do that too.
When you've had negative experiences all your life about a community, you're allowed to not give them a fair shake.
Not on my show.
I disagree with you. And you know what? No, I do that all the time. I read your Facebook. You know how painful that is? You know?
Let me ask you this question. Let's say my family was killed and raped and then killed by a bunch of black guys.
Right.
And then another one was killed by another one. So I come in here and start talking trash about black people. You're being intellectually honest about black people because of what they've done to you. Right. But that doesn't mean you can start saying things about them, which may not be true. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a false equivalence. I mean, he's talking about a cult here.
No. I get what you're saying, but I hope you didn't misunderstand. I don't blame him for being.
They do wonderful things.
I don't like them. I don't like the Hasids.
You know, listen, I've
said on this show, and people try to talk about immigration, how it's okay to have more immigrants. I was like, how about if we decide to take in 5 million Hasids? Yeah. Then we can all agree it's a bad idea.
There's something like, we got a country full of conservatives.
People who think that, America's a melting pot, it's okay to have immigrants from anywhere, they don't really believe it, because you ask them, is it okay? We have 30 million Mexicans or something, 30 million Latinos. Yeah. How about 30 million Hasids?
They don't exist.
Yeah, well, look what happened. Look what happened in East Ramapo.
What's that?
This American Life did a whole story about this. East Ramapo is in Rockland County.
What?
East Ramapo.
Oh,
East Ramapo.
I heard about
school
that.
District.
They're all buying
it's in Rockland
Ramapo.
County.
Yeah.
They became a majority, and they decided to take over the school board and started selling off the schools, cutting the budget, and buying the schools and turning them into yeshivas. I'm not making this up. This is a true story.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the people of Ramapo, the people of Rockland County, are really pissed because it's 100% legal what they did. They took a nice, beautiful suburban town
to sell schools to make
and
them
turned
yeshivas.
It into like and turned it into like a shtetl.
That's
you know?
East Ramapo. West Ramapo
still remains one of the finest Gentile.
Everybody looks like this.
Nothing but the best. Everybody looks like this.
Okay, I did want to.
I'm being objectified. Me too. That's correct. Hashtag me too, Dan.
By the way, just to
speaking of me too,
he does that every week to some guy he gets turned on by.
I'm not turned on.
Every week you talk about this.
Dan is a pillar of truth.
It's admiration. There's a difference.
I just think being a good looking guy is a lot harder than being a good looking chick. You know, there are a lot of good-looking chicks, but the guy that's as pretty as Dez is rare. I did want to talk about, if I could just, we were talking about Me Too. I'm getting into hot water with feminists on Facebook.
Me Too. I'm getting accused, too.
All fucking week, because somebody posted, Lori Kilmartin, a comic in L.A. that writes for Conan, posted an article about how, on Facebook, we shouldn't talk about what women can do or... We should shift the focus from what women can do to avoid sexual assault. It's because it's really about men not sexually assaulting. That should be what we're discussing. And because that it's blaming the victim to talk about what women should do. And I made the point that, isn't it also important to talk about what women can do? Because, don't we want to give women all the tools we can to...
We talk about defensive driving.
Defensive. The analogy would be when you're driving, you're assuming everybody else is going to do something stupid, so you drive defensively.
Right.
So is there anything wrong with giving women all the tools that they need to avoid situations, if possible, and it's not always possible, steps that they can take, if there are steps that can be
taken. There's another good metaphor about walking down a dark alley and maybe trying to avoid that as being pertinent.
Right. No, and I got assaulted verbally, being told...
Not sexually,
but... being told I was mansplaining and that I was part of the problem. thoughts, well, Des Bishop.
Those are two different things.
My thoughts on that, Dan, would be that I guess they were suggesting that they're not saying don't talk about that at all, but that there should be as much focus on
but I right. made it very clear. I said,
you were right.
I said, you know, absolutely we need to change the culture if we can, which is a tall order. Absolutely we need to, you know, change male attitudes, which is a tall order, but we should certainly strive to do that. But in addition to that, what is wrong with having a discussion about, be it self-defense, be it maybe your body language? There's things to be discussed there where perhaps one can more easily ascertain. I'm shocked at the amount
of... This is my advice.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think you should get a woman to make that point for you. And then
I think
watch
as
the
a
reaction.
Practical matter, you're correct. Do we have any women that want to speak on this, Marla? I don't know who Marla is, but she's a woman and she's sitting there.
She has been listening to the conversation.
What's the question, sir?
The question is I was attacked on Facebook because I made the point that you know, it's not victim blaming when we discuss what a woman might be able to do to avoid being sexually assaulted. We should discuss that. We should also discuss on the male end, we should also teach people not to sexually assault and put them in jail when they do. But in addition to that, we should arm women with whatever tools we can arm them with to avoid sexual assault. And this was seen as blaming the victim, mansplaining, what you will.
Well, here's the deal.
Who are you, by the way?
I'm Marla. I'm a friend of Stephen Calabria's.
Stephen Calabria, everybody, is our producer. He's a big producer in the radio business.
I'm your audience of one.
And Marla is a friend of his.
She's not being allowed to speak, which is classic woman-hating Dan Natterman behavior.
You're right, and I need to look within. Go ahead.
I think the onus has already been traditionally on women to be defensive. So to say we need to equip women with defensive measures is sort of insulting.
Okay,
because
so you...
No,
in addition.
Exist,
he says in addition to talking to men.
We already exist in a defensive state.
Right, but...
So, and also, it's sort of a crass analogy to say defensive driving versus...
Well, that was Noam's analogy.
One's vagina. Like...
right under the bus.
Know, so that's...
So you are
that,
in accord
that's my
with,
retort to that.
You are in accord. I'm glad we had a
we're
war.
Already existing in a defensive
but,
state.
Can I answer Marla?
So thank you.
Listen, answer Marla. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm a parent of a daughter. Of course, I'm going to be teaching my daughter how to keep herself safe. Not
absolutely.
Where not to be alone with a man, what to do when there's drinking, all those things. Mm-hmm. That's all Dan's saying. I'm not.
Sure.
You think I'm going to be somehow soft on the guy who harasses her or, God forbid, assaults her?
Are you going to tell your son? Do you have a son?
Yeah, I have two.
Oh, you're gonna tell
them? I told you
that
before, by the way.
Yeah,
I think you met him.
He's fertile.
Oh, that's right. I remember the moment where I thought that it was a woman.
Yeah, so, like a girl. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, are you gonna tell your sons, like, you know, respect? You know, like, that's gonna be just as important. Not to rape.
Yeah, of course I'm gonna tell them not to rape.
Really though.
Well, not.
Am I really gonna tell them not to rape?
Is that a conversation that people really have with their sons? Like, when you go to college, like, you're gonna be a freshman this year. Don't rape.
Nobody ever told me not to rape.
Well, this is what I think.
Well, I think not to rape is sort of, men know that.
No, well, you think that, this is the argument.
Apparently they don't.
This is the argument.
This is what I think. I'm going to tell you what it is.
Men know it. They just do it anyway.
If a boy grows up in a home where he sees women spoken about respectfully, treated respectfully, and children really do learn by what they see much more than what you tell them to do. So, like, my father never told me not to rape, but I mean, it was clear to me he didn't approve of rape. You know?
Well,
I don't think it's a...
And let's look at the environment in which other people at the table grew up in. What was your...
She's pointing at Loser. Let the record show you showing
about whether
Loser,
to
not
rape
at Brandon.
Or not to rape.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it was never discussed because sex was never discussed, so it was never talked about. Besides, you marry one woman, you have an arranged marriage, you marry this one woman, and you have sex with her for the rest of your life. So, like, it never
awesome.
Came up.
Okay,
it never came up.
Brandon wants to say, we got to wrap it up.
We got to wrap it up.
I just agree with what Marla said, but I just have to say, how many of us have those conversations? So you go to college, it's cliche, like... It's all about the woman, what she's got to do, what she got to do. Nobody sits down the guys or even says to everybody, like, don't rape. But then it's happening, though, right? Yeah. When you talk about what it's really happening.
I want to say something. I really do disagree, and I think everybody's got to grow up a little bit here. I've lived a life. Dove has lived a life. Dez, I'm sure. I have seen women do the most inappropriate things in my presence, where they really were just, by the grace of God, lucky that I was not a total creep. I have seen women just throw themselves, be drunk, taking off their, like, there are things, there are situations that women put themselves in with guys they don't even know, that somebody needs to tell them, don't do that.
So they're rapable.
What? What's that?
So you're saying those women are rapable. So you're saying, hey,
but that's not the, that's the asking guy, for it.
You can try to put whatever spin on it you want.
There's a difference between being rapable. There's a difference between being rapable. What he's saying is they're putting themselves in a position where it becomes, it becomes a gray area for the guy.
Listen, this is no.
I'm a good guy.
Listen, wait, hold on.
No, isn't that what you're saying?
I'm better than that.
Hold on. Are you going to tell your kids not to walk down the street holding a stack of $100 bills when everybody can see it? Why do you have to tell them that? Shouldn't they be able to walk around with their $100 bills and assume that nobody will rob them?
It feels self-evident.
Of course, you're walking around with a lot of money. You know there's bad people out there. You got to teach them how to, to the extent possible, not get robbed. That's all Dan is saying. He's not taking the onus off the robber. He's saying, grow up. It's the real world out there. You can get robbed. You can get raped. And all these things have a way of mitigating based on your behavior.
And at the same time, change the real world in which men don't do that anymore.
Wait, well, the thing we're missing here is we're talking about individuals. It's called, and I know you probably hate this, it's called rape culture, though. So when you're talking about it, it's absolutely right. But in a culture where all the messages are about go fuck bitches, go get what you want. Like,
That's hip-hop.
Oh, my God. Have you ever heard of rock and roll?
Have you ever heard Hasidic music? They do not talk about the same things you talk about. Hasidic music is different.
In rape culture, the message is not don't rape. The message is always on women to do all those things. And I mean, you're absolutely right. We should tell people all the things to keep you safe. But that's not the larger narrative, and that's what Marla was saying.
And let's see. That's fine. But let's ask ourselves realistically. If you have, right now, a 12-year-old daughter, what is more likely to keep her safe? Waiting for the world to change and men to clean up their acts, or teaching her how to stay clear of this kind of thing?
Oh, but what's actually going to change it? We end sexual assault.
We're 70 years after Brown versus Topeka Board of Education, right? We ended segregation, right? How are we doing?
You tell me, my conservative brother.
My point is that
supremacist nation that we live in, my brother.
My point is that.
You want to talk about it?
No, that's my point. My point is it's going to take a long time to change people's attitudes. It may be multi-generational. In the meantime, I don't want our women to be raped. That's all.
So my mom raised me in a culture where she said, you're going to have to work twice as hard as people. You're going to be discriminated against. That said...
Well, I read that paper. And
that said, when you go out in the world... Right, when you go out in the world, the message shouldn't be, you know, all the minorities, you got to work twice as hard. The message should be, like, end discrimination. That should be the larger message. But, of course, your mom, there's this inside outside.
What I was going to say was these discussions about black and white between a white guy and a black guy should all be done in a shared mic because it's a beautiful thing to watch.
And
can I say one
conservative, even more?
I want to say one thing.
Yeah, we got to wind up.
This is one of the only...
I didn't get the last word. I gave it to Dan.
I want Marla.
This is probably the only table where you could still have conversations like this in most places. And I'm not a conservative, and I disagree with you with like 90% of the stuff that you think.
I do better than Hasids.
But I'll tell you this. I mean, this is one of the very, very few places where you can have a conversation like this, because these are conversations that need to be had. Yeah. Because now, if you want to talk about this stuff, it within like 5 seconds, you're a mansplainer, you're promoting rape culture, you're an apologist, you're a racist.
True. Those things are all true.
But you know what? That's an unproductive response to the questions. It's an unproductive response. I was raised conservative, you know. Even after I left the community, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh and all this stuff, and then I became a liberal. And now I'm still starting to realize that that liberals are almost more oppressive than what I grew up with.
You can't ask any questions.
We have to wrap it up. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you very much.
How is Dan Bishop made it through Catholic school without being hit on? How did this happen?
I really enjoyed this panel. Good night, everybody.
Daniel, I want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
Can we please, if we're going to have this large a group. More microphones, please.
Yes.
Lou, I like
sharing the mic with him.
I hope the sound comes through.
It will come through.
I hope it does.
Have you seen the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show? John and Paul shared one mic. If it's good enough for the Beatles, it's good enough for me and Brandon.
Does Marla have
only need one mic?
I think we upset Marla, but there's nothing we can do about it now. It's too late.
So, she shouldn't be upset.
I hope not.
Another woman going to cry on the show. I don't know.
Oh, come on. All right. I'll see you next week.